With the latest agriculture news from across the state and nation, it's time for the AgNet News Hour from AgNet West. Here's your host, Danielle Leal.
Hey everyone, Danielle Leo here, and thanks for getting your agriculture news with me today. The California Senate passes fire insurance bills to increase options for farmers. Wildfires that raged across California over the past several years have devastated farms. After the flames were extinguished, the threat of wildfires continued to cost farmers in other ways, as farmers in parts of the state saw premiums on their property insurance policies rise exponentially. Last week, the California State Senate passed legislation that seeks to increase affordable insurance options for farms who are exposed to wildfire risk. Senate Bill 505, sponsored by the California Farm Bureau, now moves to the State Assembly. That was today's California Farm Bureau Food and Farm News Report, and now let's get into today's show headlines. The USDA previews emergency relief for agricultural producers. Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack plans to roll out $3.7 billion in emergency relief program and emergency livestock relief program assistance to crop and livestock producers. The funds will help producers who sustain losses due to the qualifying natural disaster event during the calendar year 2022. USDA is sharing the information early to allow producers time to gather documents in advance of program delivery. Vilsack says, quote, U.S. ag producers nationwide endured crippling natural disaster events in 2022, including a mega drought, hurricane, flooding, and wildfires. And while we have streamlined our delivery of natural disaster assistance, funding is limited and significantly less than the estimated losses. He also says they're designing payment factors to help as many producers as possible to offset that significant financial impact resulting from these ongoing widespread natural disasters. Producers who have participated in FSA programs likely have the required forms on file. You should contact your local USDA service center if you have questions. NAFB contributed to that report. And now here's AgNet West Brian German with more agriculture news.
Commercial coverage under the California FAIR Plan has received a significant upgrade. President and CEO of Western Ag Processors, Roger Isom, said that Insurance Commissioner Ricardo Lara was instrumental in bringing more support to the program, providing additional insurance options to producers.
We're not in wildfire areas, but you still need insurance, both for your property and your equipment, but also your stock throughput. Whatever it may be, you still need coverage for that. You need to protect it. And we just weren't able to get coverage, or if you could, it was very, very expensive, like record-setting expensive. And so what happened, you know, it got to the point where we had a lot of stuff not covered because we just can't get it or can't afford to. So we met with the commissioner on more than one occasion. We've had him down here to the valley. So he heard us. There is a FAIR program, which is a kind of insurance of last resort. But nonetheless, it does give us a pathway to get some coverage. Unfortunately, in the very beginning, it was limited to $3 million, which doesn't begin to cover what we needed to. But nonetheless, he worked with the FAIR folks. And then this last year, we met with them again, you know, said, hey, what can we do? We really need to increase that more. Can we get it to $20 million? And he went to work and got it done and got that program increased to $20 million. Again, it doesn't answer everything, but the fact that we can get some coverage now is extremely helpful, and we're very, very appreciative.
The National Cotton Council recently explained farm bill priorities for the cotton industry to the House Agriculture Subcommittee. NCC Senior Government Relations Representative Robbie Minnick said that the general structure of the 2018 Farm Bill benefited the cotton industry. However, there are some areas that need reforming and modernization,
including increasing the seed cotton reference price, restoring to 4 cents the economic adjustment assistance for textile mills, and increasing the rate of the marketing loan program. Along with the marketing loan program, there are several updates and ways that the industry is proposing to modernize that program and the repayment provisions. The industry's continued support for the market access program and the foreign market development program and the need for reinvestment there. And finally, adjustments to the Pima loan program and some improvements that can be made there for producers.
I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
Thanks, Brian, and stay tuned as we'll have more of the day's agriculture news and farm features here on the AgNet News Hour. Don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or if you simply need to catch the news at a different time, you can always subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search our name of AgNet West on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's AgNet West. It's available on both Apple and Android devices.
Farm employers' labor service compliance posters could save you thousands of dollars. Did you know that California lawmakers can be fined as much as $13,000 in government penalties if they don't have all the required employee and farm labor information posted for their workers? Avoid costly penalties and give yourself peace of mind knowing you are in full compliance with FELS posters. At only $175, this full set of laminated weatherproof posters eliminates the risk. Order yours at FELS.net.
Welcome back to the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal, tossing it right on over to Sabrina Halverson with today's National Spotlight.
In today's National Spotlight, during his opening statement at last week's House Ag Subcommittee hearing on forestry and wildfire, California Congressman and Subcommittee Chair Doug LaMalfa talked about some of the devastating fires California has seen in recent years.
Over the past 5 years alone, we've witnessed some of the most destructive fires on record. As these fires become larger and more intense, more communities are impacted every day. The statistics are clear. 2015, 2017, 2020, we saw more than 10 million acres burned per year. Six of the seven largest wildfires we've seen in California, my home state, have occurred in 2020 and 2021, including two large fires that burned approximately 1 million acres each, both in my congressional district. The August Complex fire in 2020 burned more than 1 million acres, and the Dixie Fire of 2021 burned 960,000 acres. In 2018, we had the Camp Fire, which destroyed the town of Paradise, took the lives of 85 people. As a side note, the good people of my district provided me with this special gavel made with salvaged wood from the Camp Fire. So I'm grateful to be able to wield this in their honor as we do the good work that this committee needs to do to make sure this sort of thing doesn't continue to keep happening.
He gave suggestions of what he thinks needs to happen.
We must dramatically increase active management and speed up the pace and scale, an often used term in this committee and these conversations about forestry. Pace and scale of forest restoration on tens of millions of acres of federal and non-federal land. This includes activities such as prescribed fires, cross-boundary field breaks, logging activities, yes, we'll say that word, logging, to thin overstocked stands, the use of fire retardants, and expedited salvage logging and burned area rehabilitation after a fire.
And he said Congress needs to do more.
Congress has provided the Forest Service with significant new funding to support the agency's 10-year wildfire plan. While funding is clearly needed to log and properly manage millions of acres at high risk of wildfire, I also believe that funding alone won't be enough to protect our forests and communities long term. The agency will continue to be challenged by the regulatory hurdles that it has long faced. This includes lengthy processes under NEPA, frivolous litigation only delays critical management activities. It also includes the latest legal challenge from extreme activists to curb the use of fire retardant, which we've discussed, which is an essential tool for firefighters to use and to slow the spread of wildfire. Looking ahead to the next Farm Bill, the 2014-2018 reauthorizations provide the Forest Service with a variety of tools intended to help the agency better manage, incentivize more public-private partnerships, grow new markets for forest products, and help rural communities thrive. This includes expanding existing authorities such as Good Neighbor and Stewardship Contracting to leverage more partnerships that will increase landscape-scale restoration projects. It also includes expanded use of categorical exclusions, such as for insect and disease treatments, to help move along common-sense forest management activities with known beneficial outcomes. The 2018 Farm Bill contained a research and development program to help encourage new markets and infrastructure for forest products and advance tall wood building construction in the United States. We must also encourage the construction of new sawmills and other forest product infrastructure to ensure the long-term viability of these partners.
That's today's National Spotlight. I'm Sabrina Halverson for AgNet West.
Thanks, Sabrina. And in today's livestock report, National Cattlemen's Beef Association CEO Colin Woodall is pushing back on beef industry misinformation.
There's a lot of misinformation out there, and there are people that believe that NCBA is the checkoff, that we control the checkoff, and that we ultimately write our own checks out of the checkoff funds, and that's not the way this program works.
A handful of lawmakers are supporting the Opportunities for Fairness in Farming Act, also known as the OFF Act, which would reform checkoff programs. As the lawmakers claim, there needs to be more transparency and control over checkoff contractors. However, what all counters?
NCBA is one of nine groups that serve as a contractor. We are the largest contractor, the National Beef Checkoff. But each year we have to go to a group called the Beef Promotion Operating Committee, sometimes just called the OC, which is made up of cattle producers, 10 of them representing the Federation of State Beef Councils and 10 of them representing the Cattlemen's Beef Board.
Woodoff said any ideas from the Beef It's What's for Dinner campaign to research must be pitched to the Beef Promoting Operating Committee for approval.
And only if they like what we are pitching will they authorize us to do that work and provide the funds to do that work. And that work has to be audited. We audit it internally at NCBA. It's audited and approved by the Cattlemen's Beef Board, also by USDA. And again, every once in a while, the Office of the Inspector General will come in and look at it too.
Woodall adds a lot of effort is put forward into making sure those checkoff dollars are being spent properly. And in more livestock news, 2024 could be another year of declining U.S. meat production. USDA's Gary Crawford talks with USDA's Outlook Board Chairman Mark Jekowanowski in this report.
Food shoppers looking to buy meat in 2024 may find a little bit less of it available.
Total meat production, we're forecasting to be down about 1.2 billion pounds from the current year, from 2023.
About a 1% decline, but USDA Outlook Chairman Mark Jekowanowski says that production's almost entirely due to reductions in beef output.
Beef production, we have forecast to decline just about 2.2 billion pounds.
About an 8% decline as cattle numbers continue low because so many cattle were marketed months and months ago because of drought and high feed prices. Also now, many producers are sending fewer of their heifers to slaughter, keeping more for breeding in order to eventually rebuild the beef herd. Until that happens, Mark Jekowanowski says steer prices next year could hit record highs because of both low beef and cattle supplies.
And continued relatively strong demand.
This is Gary Crawford reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
This is the Agnet News Hour by Agnet West. I'm your host, Daniel Leal. We'll be back in just a moment with more of the day's national headlines and local reports when we return. But don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or if you simply need to catch the news at a different time, you can always subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search Agnet News Hour or Agnet West on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's Agnet News Hour. It's available on both Apple and Android devices.
You're going to need me.
You're going to need us.
All of us.
You're going to need our help with your water. Your air, your food.
You're going to need our determination, our compassion.
You're going to need the next generation of leaders to face the challenges the future will bring.
And we promise we'll be there when you need us.
Today, 4-H is growing the next generation of leaders. Support us at 4-H.org.
You've been listening to the Agnet News Hour by Agnet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Welcome back. We've got more of the day's agriculture news right now.
Big growth in the mango industry. That's coming up on This Land of Ours. The mango industry is having record volume of high-quality fruit arriving in the U.S. this year. Mango volume for the past 3 weeks has topped the charts at 4.4 million, 5.1 million, and 4.6 million boxes per week. The National Mango Board has engaged its growers, importers, and retailers to initiate key marketing strategies to drive sales for this superfruit heading into June's National Mango Month and National Mango Day on July 22nd. Traditionally, June and July are peak months for mango volume. However, the unheard-of numbers further extend the opportunity for more consumer sales. Dan Spielman, Director of Marketing of the National Mango Board, says this large supply presents tremendous opportunity for retailers to create colorful, large displays and showcase the availability of all mango varieties now available at local grocery stores throughout the U.S. The National Mango Board recommends retailers talk to their suppliers for specific information on availability and sizes. I'm Sabrina Halverson for Agnet West.
This is the Agricultural Law and Tax Report,
I'm Roger McCowan. The U.S. Supreme Court has dismissed the case challenging California's Proposition 12. That's the law that makes the sale of pork in California contingent on compliance with conditions that virtually no existing commercial farms meet. The case is a big deal for hog farmers and agriculture in general. I'll be back in a moment to discuss.
Agriculture needs the next generation. Kansas State University's College of Agriculture prepares students through applied learning, internships, and research. Learn more at ag.ksu.edu.
I'll get back to the report in a moment, but I want you to know that Schrader Real Estate and Auction Company has sold farm and ranch land and farm equipment in 40 states. Learn how the Schrader family can help your family. Visit SchraderAuction.com. That's S-C-H-R-A-D-E-R Auction.com. To sell pork in California, the pig from which the pork derives must have been born to a sow housed in space requirements that few farms satisfy. California raises hardly any pigs, but accounts for about 13% of U.S. pork consumption. That means the costs of complying with the law fall almost exclusively on out-of-state farmers. Because a single pig is processed into cuts that are sold nationwide in response to demand, those costs will be passed on to consumers everywhere in transactions that have nothing to do with California. The Supreme Court said the matter should be left up to Congress, and the case couldn't survive a motion to dismiss. There was no claim that the law purposefully discriminated, and it turned out that counsel for the pork producers didn't emphasize enough the balancing of the out-of-state harm compared to the in-state benefits. Justice Kavanaugh told the pork producers' lawyers that if they had pled the case properly, they could have at least survived a motion to dismiss. The case is a very important one for the pork industry and consumers. Also, if one state can prescribe production methods for products it doesn't produce, other states may retaliate. This has been the Agricultural Law and Tax Report. I'm Roger McCowan.
A show of support from NCBA for some new legislation. The National Cattlemen's Beef Association announced its support of the Foreign Animal Disease Prevention, Surveillance, and Rapid Response Act of 2023. The bipartisan legislation would continue making critical investments in foreign animal disease response programs, they say, which are currently overseen by USDA. NCBA President Todd Wilkinson says the threat of a foreign animal disease outbreak in the U.S. represents an existential threat to every cattle producer. He says as a cattle producer, it is reassuring to see bipartisan support for legislation like this, which will help our industry prepare for and ultimately prevent a national crisis. The Act will provide additional funding for three important animal health programs established through the 2018 Farm Bill, including the National Animal Vaccine and Veterinary Countermeasures Bank, the National Animal Disease Preparedness and Response Program, and the National Animal Health Laboratory Network. I'm Sabrina Halverson for AgNet West.
The USDA's WIC program provides low-income women, infants, and children with supplemental healthy foods and also health information and medical referrals and such. The problem is this.
Only 50% of all eligible individuals participate in WIC, a shortfall of almost 6 million moms, babies, and young children missing out on critical benefits.
USDA Food and Nutrition Services Deputy Undersecretary Stacy Dean telling reporters Thursday that to close that gap, the USDA, along with the Food Research and Action Center, is allocating $16 million in grants for 36 local community projects in order to
test new ways for reaching eligible families,
including
co-locating WIC staff at medical offices, developing culturally appropriate materials, and so many more, including reaching out to military families.
Dean said the USDA is also working nationally to make WIC more accessible
so that more eligible moms, babies, and young children can tap into the program's incredible benefits.
Thanks, Gary. And here's Dean with more comments on those grants.
Today, the Department of Agriculture is pleased to announce the funding of 36 projects that will help broaden the reach and impact of USDA's WIC program so that more eligible moms, babies, and young children can tap into the program's incredible benefits. In total, more than $16 million are being awarded to WIC state and local agencies and community-based organizations across the country. The funding is being made available through subgrants under our WIC Community Innovation and Outreach Project, which is part of a larger strategy funded by the American Rescue Plan to modernize and innovate WIC. Today's funding is being awarded through a cooperative agreement between USDA's Food and Nutrition Service and the Food Research and Action Center, also known as FRAC.
This is the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. We'll be back in just a moment with more of the day's national headlines and local reports when we return. But don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or if you simply need to catch the news, At a different time, you can always subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search Agnet News Hour or Agnet West on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's Agnet News Hour. It's available on both Apple and Android devices.
How are GMO plants made? First, scientists look for a desired trait in a plant, animal, or even bacteria. It could be a trait like resistance to drought, insects, or viruses. Then they copy the gene that contains that trait and insert it into the DNA of the plant they want to improve. Scientists then grow that plant to see if it adopts the desired trait. Feed your mind with more GMO facts on FDA's website.
Welcome back to the Agnet News Hour by Agnet West, providing you with statewide agriculture news daily. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Now let's listen in to more featured segments.
Weather observers say El Nino is rapidly developing now and will keep areas across the north and along the Canadian border hotter than normal this summer. I'm Mark Oppold with your bottom line report for this Monday, brought to you by Superior Livestock. Several major weather services released their updated summer outlooks over the weekend. Noteworthy is the bulk of the heat will stay north of I-80 most of the summer. Eastern Corn Belt could experience one of the coolest summers on record. Now, extreme heat is predicted for all of August in the Western Corn Belt and Northern Belt. This will affect pollination of that late planted crop and perhaps give support to the grain trade. Models also show wetter than normal conditions in the east and southeast. This is the bottom line report. Sell your livestock the Superior way, video auctions, internet auctions, or the country page. Learn more at superiorlivestock.com. June live cattle just missed setting new contract highs on Friday. We think the lower cattle on feed numbers and lower placement numbers from Friday afternoon's report are already factored in this trade. Pork producers are current, and their marketing's right now heading into June. That should give a boost as well. I'm Mark Oppold, wishing you a profitable day, a profitable week ahead.
The 2022 Census of Agriculture. Its development has been one consisting of conversation among USDA National Agricultural Statistics Service officials on its content.
I won't say we argue, but we have a lot of healthy discussion around ever adding something to the census.
Promoting return of and response within the census forms. And once collection is complete, reviewing the aggregate data before release of the census. Data that will be in demand by users on various levels for various purposes.
Grain companies, elevators to locate facilities, rail spurs. There are a lot of different uses of this information that directly impact the farmers and their local communities.
I'm Rod Bain. Jody McDaniel and Hubert Hamer of USDA NAS join me as we look at the timeline and usage of the Census of Agriculture in this edition of Agriculture USA. The response phase of the 2022 Census of Agriculture is winding down, but there is still time for those who have not filled out and turned in their census forms to do so. But what does it take for USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service to create a census form, particularly the questions to ask farmers and ranchers? Jody McDaniel of USDA NAS says it starts with a review of the prior census.
We added precision agriculture because that's a new and emerging trend, but it also requires a lot of connectivity through internet access, so we modernized those components as well. We also added hemp to the census.
Census development comes with a gathering of experts.
We have an individual from every program area here at NAS that comes together and we review the entire content. We also put out content requests. We evaluate each one of those requests before it can be added to the census.
So when it comes to development of questions on the census form,
every question on the census does serve a purpose and is part of providing data to help inform the impact of the ag community.
McDaniel says many of the questions may not apply to census responders, depending on the types of agriculture conducted by the census participant. also expediting response as the period of time for census surveys to be submitted approaches.
We also have invested this year in having a modernized web tool. It's accessible through the data portal. And if you go into that portal, when you start answering your questions, you could then actually have a reduced size of your questionnaire because it's only going to show you the questions that are impactful to you based on your previous answers as you go through the questionnaire.
Last call of data collection includes follow-up phone calls and visits by local field enumerators to those who have yet to fill out and submit their census forms.
It's staged follow-up because census goes on for quite a while because we want to make sure we capture all the voices in American agriculture.
Regardless of the size or focus of an operation. Case in point, Minnesota cattle farmer and current president of the National Association of Farm Broadcasters, Joe Gill.
I got 20 calves. I think I got 5 surveys. I get all the emails. I'm like, I don't really exist, but I did send it back. I went online and did it. It was great because I could save, go back to it later, finish it. It was extensive, but it was good.
Jody McDaniel says the census process will soon transition.
My team out in the field right now, they are editing census records, but they're also starting analysis on that data that's came in. So that process is ongoing. And when we hit that point where we think we're going to be able to publish as much data as we honestly possibly can based on historical trends, then we will stabilize and start moving into the whole publishing piece.
With scheduled release of the 2022 Census of Agriculture set for February of next year. So who uses this data? McDaniel says many, from the producer to the lawmaker, agribusiness, rural governments, and transport entities, among several. As an example,
let's say you're raising corn in Illinois. There's the opportunity for a new ethanol plant to be built. What data do we think they're going to look at to see where that saturation of corn production is in the Midwest? It's actually NAS data. And the most comprehensive NAS data comes from the Census of Agriculture, which is down to the county level every 5 years.
Beyond that, from an industry perspective,
they look at it from the perspective of infrastructure, maybe a new grain elevator. Maybe they're looking at moving into renewable energy and they're looking where there might be opportunities for farm ground. The impact really comes down to what it is the one individual producer is doing. But the overall value for all producers is it's their opportunity to share their voice and tell their story about their operation and their part of American agriculture and just make sure that they're represented as we move forward.
This has been Agriculture USA, a broadband reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
This is the Agnet News Hour by Agnet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. We'll be back in just a moment with more of the day's national headlines and local reports when we return. But don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or if you simply need to catch the news at a different time, you can always subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search Agnet News Hour or Agnet West on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's Agnet News Hour. It's available on both Apple and Android devices.
Over the years, you've brought them into your home. You were prescribed opioids after the C-section and after Dad's back injury. They helped when you were in pain, and you held on to them, just in case. But did you know holding on to unused opioids puts your family at risk? Trouble with opioids can start at home with unused medicines, such as pills, patches, and syrups. You can remove the risk and protect your family. Find out how at www.fda.gov/drugdisposal.
You've been listening to the Agnet News Hour by Agnet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Welcome back. We've got part 3 of my conversation with former California Farm Bureau president and current Modesto almond grower, Paul Wegner. We talk all about the minimum wage standard, a shortened work week, the overtime payroll, and the implications on farming operations. I talk with Farm Bureau folks, and actually I just talked with Shannon Douglas, and she said that Farm Bureau has staff and its members, they help find solutions to our problems. And that's one of the benefits of Farm Bureau. So I guess in your opinion, or what you've heard from other growers, what would be a solution to this, you know, wage rate problem? And is it having that split wage rate? And do you think that it would be successful again?
We're not going back. We're not going to get a split wage rate. Mm. The one thing you can never do is you can't put Humpty Dumpty back together again. The next battle is going to be if they put a ballot initiative for an $18 an hour minimum wage, and then put an escalator on there. We need to fight, and I mean fight hard, to make sure that the metropolitan areas, that thin blue line along the coast, pays their fair share. Mm-hmm. And that means, so if you go to San Francisco today into a restaurant and they have the $15.50 minimum wage, you will invariably see at that restaurant a line item where you, as the person buying the food, pays for that. So they pass it right on. And so restaurants in San Francisco said, oh, we can't pay this $15 an hour minimum wage. So what they did is they added a line item for the minimum wage. So you go in and you buy a nice dinner in San Francisco, not only are you paying for the food, but you now have a line item paying for the increase in the minimum wage.
Huh.
And that will always be passed on. But farmers and ranchers, we can't do that. Dairymen can't do that.
Right.
We can't go in and say, we're going to get more for our milk now because you wanted to have this. The one thing I think that the Farm Bureau could do and should do, and we were talking about it before when I was there, and I think it's the one way, if the general public says people that work on our farms and ranches need to be paid more, then make it for a tax, in lieu of taxes, that minimum wage, a farmer would pay it, and you would pay less taxes on that. It would be a tax credit.
Mm-hmm.
Ironically, that's what they're doing in the state of New York. So the state of New York, which much like California, is really very large metropolitan areas,
right,
are the tail that's wagging the bigger dog.
Mm-hmm.
And they have said, yes, maybe we can come up, rather than a tax write-off, so you can already write off your expenses, but you should get a tax credit. If what you're saying is, we want farmers and or farm employees, farm workers, and I like to call them farm employees rather than farm workers, mm-hmm, as connotation. I think that's been developed around farm workers as being degradatory.
Mm-hmm.
It's a farm employees. If we want our farm employees to be paid at a certain level, then it's the consumer of that product that should be paying that.
Mm-hmm.
And the way you do that is through a tax credit, so that farmers, when they do make money, they can write that off their taxes, not only as a tax deduction, but a tax credit. And that's one thing that I'm hoping Farm Bureau will really look to in the future, because California is always going to want to be the shock job.
Mm-hmm.
We're always going to want to be the first one to $18, $20, $25 an hour minimum wage,
right,
not realizing the ramifications for those of us in agriculture or other industries, the timber industry, the fishing industry, anybody that can't pass their costs on, like the restaurateur in San Francisco. And you can be sure that they will always pass those costs on. We can't pass those costs on. We just didn't make the fight loud enough, mm-hmm, that a $15 an hour minimum wage in the Valley, a corresponding one in the city, should be $33.50. And so whatever is passed in the future, it has to be adjusted for the local economy.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll get better legislation, because I will guarantee you that if you went over to those restaurants in San Francisco and said, you got to start paying your dishwashers $33.50 an hour, we wouldn't have the bill that we have today for the $15 an hour minimum wage.
Right. Let's just say, since this new increase in wage rate has been passed, we'll just look at the last 8 years or so. What has maybe been the rate at which this has put farmers out of business? Obviously, there's probably not a specific number that you can give me, but in general, has this increase in the cost of production put farmers out of business?
It's always a slippery slope when you talk about putting farmers out of business. We know that every time there's a new regulation or a new tax posed or imposed, that it's going to be the straw that breaks the camel's back,
right,
for somebody.
Mm-hmm.
That just means the neighbor bought them out, or it means a corporate farm, or it means a pension fund, or it means Stanford, Harvard, the CalPERS, Trinitas, which is basically owned by the Canadian pension fund. They will take it over and they will be doing it. And so that's the one thing that always drove me crazy at Farm Bureau. They said, well, we hear Farm Bureau saying that this regulation and this or that is going to cause a problem for farmers, and yet we see the farm gate value of production in California increasing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yes, it is, but it's doing it by concentration. Mm. We also see the statistic that 98% of farms are still family owned. Mm-hmm. Yes, they are. But what we're seeing is a push to smaller or larger. And so that mid-sized farm family is becoming extinct. We're either becoming boutique, and a lot of people are downsizing, mm-hmm. going to farmers markets, doing on-farm sales, and becoming a boutique farmer, or they're having to become much bigger. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it has caused a lot of people to sell out. I mean, they've just said, now, has that land not gone under production? No, it's gone to somebody else that's, become bigger, more efficient, mm-hmm. more machinery. But it has done away with that mid-sized farmer, and we're seeing that mid-sized farm and ranch, that mid-sized dairy, they're disappearing, and they're disappearing at a phenomenal rate. And that is the corpus of what California agriculture, American agriculture was for years, was that family farmer. Maybe you had two or three generations working together. They had three or four or five employees, and now we're becoming a much more corporate structure. Still might be a family ownership, but it's a corporate structure. I mean, we're incorporated, because my son Luke farms with us. And so we're incorporated because it just makes it easier, to have a corporate structure, but we're still a family farm. And, I farm today what five or six farmers farmed, 40 years ago. And I tell my son, it could be that, over the next 20, 30 years, somebody else swallows us up. And we will continue to see that land will continue to be farmed. It's the structure that farms it. But clearly, to your question in the beginning, it has put people out of business. But that's fodder under the wheels of all this regulation and taxes that nobody's going to really see.
You're listening to AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leo. We'll be right back in just a moment with more agriculture news.
Farm employers' labor service compliance posters could save you thousands of dollars. Did you know that California lawmakers can be fined as much as $13,000 in government penalties if they don't have all the required employee and farm labor information posted for their workers? Avoid costly penalties and give yourself peace of mind knowing you are in full compliance with FELS posters. At only $175, this full set of laminated weatherproof posters eliminates the risk. Order yours at FELS.net.
You've been listening to the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Welcome back. We've got more of the day's agriculture news right now. 2024 Dairy Price Projections. USDA Outlook Chairman Mark Jekowanowski with USDA's new forecast for the 2024 dairy product prices.
Cheese prices down just slightly, almost rounding to zero. But butter prices expected to be down about 9 cents per pound. Non-fat dry milk prices down about 7 cents per pound. And the class prices, which again are based off of the product prices, those are also expected to be down year over year. Class 3 price we're forecasting right now at $17.50 per hundredweight. Class 4 price, $17.35 per hundredweight. So those each are down 25 cents and 95 cents per hundredweight, respectively. And the all milk price is forecast to fall to just under $20 per hundredweight, $19.90 per hundredweight. That would be down 60 cents.
There's less than a month left to submit applications to the U.S. Department of Agriculture for Conservation Innovation Grants projects in California. CIG projects are meant to support the development and adoption of innovative conservation approaches and technologies. USDA's Natural Resources Conservation Service will be accepting applications from interested parties through June 19th. NRCS expects to make selections by June 30th, with award notifications projected to be announced by September 30th. This year, there's up to $500,000 available for California CIG. Projects can be between 1 and 3 years in duration, with a maximum award amount for a single project being $150,000. All non-federal entities and individuals are invited to apply and submit applications through grants.gov. NRCS administers CIG as part of the larger Environmental Quality Incentives Program. I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
A bill is incentivizing the use of cover crops. Senator Sherrod Brown of Ohio and several state representatives introduced a bipartisan legislation to incentivize farmers to plant cover crops to help boost environmental conservation. It's called the Conservation Opportunity and Volunteers Environment Resiliency Program, also known as the Cover Act, and it would provide farmers who plant cover crops a crop insurance discount of $5 per acre. It would also lower the long-term cost of crop insurance by making the pandemic cover crop program permanent, authorizing additional funding for technical assistance in assessing the Good Steward cover crop program, and creating a soil health pilot program. Senator Brown says, quote, "Farmers are the original conservationist. By utilizing cover crops, they can increase yields, decrease pesticide use, and reduce runoff into waterways, which is good for everyone. Planting cover crops slows erosion, promotes soil health, improves water availability, suppresses weeds, attracts pollinators, helps control pests and diseases, and increases biodiversity. Cover crops also increase yields and reduce crop insurance losses caused by prevented planting." Common cover crops used in California include subterranean clover, rye, annual ryegrass, cowpeas, white clover, sweet clover, barley, sorghum Sudan grass hybrid, medic, Australian winter peas, crimson clover, as well as other native species. To learn more about California cover crop resources, you can visit ucanr.edu.
To get more information on the topics you heard today, visit AgNet West online at agnetwest.com. You can also stay connected by following us on our social media at AgNet West on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can also find our broadcast team of Danielle Leal, Brian German, and Sabrina Halvertson on Facebook and Twitter. Thank you for listening to the AgNet News Hour from AgNet West. AgNet West Radio Network, your primary choice for agriculture news.